Welcome to Moxie Bets, presented by Caesars Sportsbook. I'm your host, Katie Mox. Coming up on today's show, the World Cup quarterfinal is set and we'll preview all four matches. Plus, now we're down to eight teams. Who do we think is going to win it all? And of course, we'll get into some NFL. Of course, it's a betting show. We're going to talk NFL here. I'm going to give you my Mox Locks for Thursday Night Football between the Raiders and the Rams. But first, let's start with the Mox Thoughts. We've got some huge news this morning to get into in the MLB winter meetings. Aaron Judge and the Yankees have agreed to a 9-year, $360 million contract. It comes a day after it was falsely reported that Arson Judge was signing with the Giants. So the Yankees fans can finally exhale. Judge's contract is the largest free agent contract in MLB history, and his $40 million AAV makes him the highest paid position player. After his historic season, Aaron Judge is the favorite to lead the league in home runs at plus 600, and the Yankees are plus 850 to win the World Series in 2023, only behind the Astros, plus 400, no Verlander there anymore, and the Dodgers at plus 500. My reaction to this is mixed because I'm from the Bay Area, and you can see I got E40 over here that is wearing his Giants gear. So I was excited for Aaron Judge to come home to the Bay Area and potentially sign with the Giants. However, I'm also a resident of New York City. I have a ton of friends who are Yankees fans, so I'm very, very happy for them. It seems like Aaron Judge really did want to stay in New York. And I feel like, you know, the reporter that had tweeted this out a little bit too fast. One, you got to fact check. But two, I thought maybe it was, you know, Judge's agent that kind of wanted to get the news out there of how much San Francisco was offering him in order for the Yankees to act fast and make sure that they matched it or did better. So mixed feelings on this one. I would have been happy with him in San Francisco, but I'm also happy with him still in New York. All right, people, we're brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. See, it's not just about the daily promos, odd boosts, or the hundreds of ways to wager. It's about the immortal words of Caesar himself. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Every bet you place on the app, no matter the outcome, earns towards exclusive perks at Caesars Rewards destinations everywhere. Hotel stays, concert tickets, bonuses, and more. Download the Caesars Sportsbook app, become a Caesars Rewards member today and get more with every wager. Must be 21 or older to gamble. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-522-4700.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Time now for Capper's Corner. We're going to talk to one of our guests today that we're so excited to have, BJ Cunningham from Action Network. He is their soccer analyst extraordinaire. We're so excited to have you. BJ, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. So I have to say, I'm not a huge soccer bettor, so I'm going to rely on you a lot in this segment to tell us where we should go. So let's first start with the quarterfinal that is set. It's going to begin this Friday. If we take a look at some of those matchups, you got Croatia versus Brazil. That's Friday at 10 a.m. Netherlands versus Argentina at 1 p.m. Morocco versus Portugal. Portugal really making a run here, Saturday at 10 a.m. And then England versus France. So if we look at the first one, Croatia versus Brazil. Brazil's the big favorite here, minus 275. If you're feeling frisky, Croatia plus 750. Brazil coming off that 4-1 victory versus South Korea on Monday, while Croatia enters this match after defeating Japan, basically just on penalty kicks. So what do you like about this this matchup?
Yeah, so this matchup's kind of interesting. It feels like the end of the road here for Croatia, who made it to the final in 2018. They have an aging midfield, an aging starting 11. They just played 120 minutes in a grueling match against Japan, a very up and down type match. So I'm not really sure how much gas they have left in the tank here. And now they're facing the best team in the world in Brazil. And the problem that has existed for Croatia for a really, really long time is they're a very slow, pragmatic build-up style of team. It's the same type of team that Brazil faced in the group stage against Serbia and against Switzerland, and they held them to basically nothing over full 90 minutes. They obviously didn't score and basically created nothing. Brazil defensively, although they have all these amazing attacking players like Neymar, Vinicius Jr., Richarlison, they're an outstanding defensive team because they are so possession dominant. They average over 500 passes per 90 minutes. A lot of those passes are actually lateral or behind. It's just they use a lot of combination passes to get the ball moving forward, not a lot of long balls. Croatia, they've been a little bit fortunate defensively. They've had problems at goalkeeper for a long time. He obviously saved three penalties in the penalty shootout, but he's made mistakes after mistakes and gotten away with it. Oof. That's not going to happen here against Brazil. So it's a real problem here for Croatia. Like they, even going forward, they don't have great finishers. Like they've created 2.2 expected goals outside of the match against Canada where they scored four. They don't have a great finisher, obviously, in Kramaric up front. So I really don't know how they're going to create much here against Brazil. So I do like a prop bet. Okay. It's both teams to score no. Basically one team is not going to score essentially at minus 140. Because as we've seen with Brazil against South Korea and against Serbia, they can really, really run up the score. So you protect yourself instead of taking under 2.5. You can protect yourself with that and basically betting on Croatia not to score. But again, in soccer matches, red cards happen, injuries happen where, you know, fluke things happen. So you also get the small percentage chance that Croatia wins this match 0-0 or it essentially goes to extra time at 0-0. But I do believe that it feels like the end of the road for Croatia. There's just, they have to be so gassed going into this quarterfinal match.
Okay, so that's interesting. So both teams to score, you're saying no. That's minus 145 on Caesars. Croatia just a little bit gassed here, probably too much for Brazil. Where I get worried in soccer matches, and it's probably because I'm just a novice bettor, is the extra time. It's like your bet could be hitting, and then all of a sudden you got all that penalty time later, and then I'm just sweating. I'm just like sweating, like, please just hold on for these extra few minutes.
Yeah, so for that, a lot of the soccer odds that you see are going to be only for the first 90 minutes. Great. You can obviously bet teams to advance, but a lot of the over-unders, spreads, everything like that is all based on just the regular 90 minutes. So your bet is pretty much done once you hit 90 minutes, unless you have obviously a to advance.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Okay. So let's move on to Netherlands versus Argentina. Argentina favored plus 117. Netherlands plus 260. This is interesting. Both plus money on this one. You'll have to explain that to me because normally in football, the favorite would be at a negative number here. Mm-hmm. But all right. The Netherlands advanced after defeating the U.S. men's national team 3-1. Oh, in the round of 16, it was very hard for us Americans. Argentina got past Australia 2-1 over the weekend to advance after winning Group C, despite a surprising upset in group play against Saudi Arabia. What do you like from this one? You could do money line, of course. You could do both teams to score, yes or no. The total is 2.5. What do you think?
I like Netherlands to advance at plus 140. Argentina really has not looked that great throughout this entire World Cup, and they've played a pretty easy schedule up to this point. You mentioned the upset against Saudi Arabia. They were on the wrong side of variance there. Like Saudi Arabia basically only took a few shots, scored twice from outside the box. Argentina created a ton. But even from that point on, Argentina really hasn't been that impressive. And they're really just incredibly reliant on Lionel Messi to create all of their chances. And he is, you know, still one of the best players in the world at 35. But the problems that have existed for Argentina for a long time is that tactically, they just don't have the midfield. They don't have the fullbacks. And they don't have the pieces around Messi to really be one of the best teams in the world. And the problems for Argentina throughout this tournament is teams are playing high lines against them. So what's happening is the midfielders are getting pressed so far up the pitch, trying to put pressure on that high line and try to make runs in behind, that there's nobody in the middle of the pitch to come receive the ball. Mm. So the center backs either have to play the ball out wide or they have to play risky long balls up front. And then what's happened is Messi has had to come out way, way too far to come receive the ball. And you do not want your best attacking player receiving the ball 40, 50 yards away from the goal. So a lot of what Argentina's relied on is at shots from outside the box. Messi scored twice from outside the box. He did against Australia. He did it against Mexico. Even the match against Australia, who really is one of the lesser talented teams in this entire tournament, if you look at the rolling chances of throughout how the match played out, Argentina created just 0.6 expected goals up until the 85th minute. Mm-hmm. And the match obviously got open. It got stretched. So you'll see Argentina created 1.6 expected goals. 1.1 of that came in the final 5 minutes of the entire match. And Australia had a couple golden chances that they could have tied the match with. So Argentina has not looked impressive whatsoever. And the Dutch, all credit to them. They were really good against the United States. Like if you watch the match, you'll say, okay, the United States dominated a lot of possession. They looked pretty threatening and everything. But what Netherlands did such a good job of is they just attacked the United States down the flanks where we were weakest. All three goals came off of crosses. The Netherlands is perfectly fine sitting back defensively, conceding possession and countering very well. And that's something Argentina hasn't faced so far this tournament. So I really, really do like the Netherlands to advance here. I think the price is good enough for them. Argentina just hasn't faced a halfway decent midfield yet. And Netherlands has one of the best midfielders in the world in Frankie de Jong. So I think this is a really stern test here for Argentina. And if they get by, it's going to be off some low quality chances from Messi. So, and I don't like to bet on that when I'm betting on soccer. So I like Netherlands to advance plus one.
Netherlands to advance. I know a lot of people have been saying this is Messi's last World Cup. And a lot of people cheering on for him in order to win this one. But you're saying they might not even advance out of this match. All right, let's move on to Saturday, Morocco versus Portugal. Morocco stunned Spain on penalty kicks to advance to the quarterfinals. But they're going to have to face Portugal, who advanced by beating Switzerland 6-1 with help from a hat trick from Ramos there, who replaced Cristiano Ronaldo in the starting lineup. What do you like from this one? Moneyline Morocco plus 450, Portugal minus 155, spread just half a goal here. What do you think?
I do like the over 2.5 goals at plus 120. What we've seen from this World Cup is that once the first, and this is very true with Portugal matches as well, is that once that first goal goes in, just all hell breaks loose because the opponent or whoever concedes first says, oh my gosh, I got to get back in this match. I can't sit defensive. I can't sit compact. I have to play open. And Portugal, well, I don't really like them that much, and they're not a great tactical side. Ooh. They have incredible attacking players. Yeah. And when you afford incredible attacking players enough space, they can really punish you. And you saw that's what happened with Switzerland. Even though the first goal was kind of a nothing goal against Switzerland, Switzerland was a very compact team, and they said, oh, crap, we got to play open. And when you play open with those attacking players, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
All credit to Morocco, though, against Spain. Like, if you look at the box score, Spain controlled 77% possession. They completed over 700 passes. They had one shot on target. Like, you can control as much possession as you want. You can complete all those passes, but if you can't get into the final third and you can't create a chance in the box, it does you no good. Yeah. And in Morocco, it's a similar conversation with Croatia. You know, they have to be gassed as well. They just played a grueling 120 minutes where they had to sit in and defend in their own final third against Spain. They obviously won on penalties, but they've basically been playing the same starting 11 for all four matches. So now you have to go up against Portugal, who's had the ability to rotate guys because they won their first two matches of the group stage, because they went up so big against Switzerland. They were able to sub in quite a few guys. They'll be the fresher team. They'll be probably the more threatening team. And I truly believe that Portugal will be able to find that goal because Morocco has been fortunate defensively. They've conceded one goal off of 3.3 expected. So they are way overdue to concede. Portugal is on an incredible finishing run right now. But the flip side of that is Portugal's defense has been leaky as well. Like, they've conceded over 5 expected goals in 4 matches. They obviously conceded against Switzerland. They conceded twice to South Korea. Uruguay hit the post 3 times against them. So I think this match has the ability to get pretty crazy once that first goal goes in. So I do like the price on over 2.5 goals at plus 120.
Okay, yeah, one of our cappers that comes on the show, Kenny Betts Big, loves Portugal. He has a big futures ticket on Portugal, so I'm sure he'll be happy to hear you say some of the things that you said on here. So finally, Saturday afternoon, excuse me, we've got England at plus 215 versus France plus 130. Explain to me how both of these are at plus money.
Well, you have the possibility of a draw. So if the match, like I already mentioned, if it ends in the first 90 minutes, you know, you have that percentage chance of a draw. Which is usually pretty big in soccer. It's usually around 25-30% of soccer matches ended in a draw. So if you see
two matchups and they're both at plus money, then the likelihood of a draw is what odds makers
right.
are
it, it means on. It means it's a very even match.
Okay. All right, good. Good to know. Learn something new every day. All right, England cruised to a 3-0 victory against Senegal to advance, and France advanced to the quarterfinals following a one-sided victory of its own, outworking Poland for a 3-1 win with 2 goals from Mbappe. Did I say that right? Mbappe. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a Hanson song, you know, Mbappe. Yep. All right. So can the French inch closer to their second straight World Cup win?
I don't think so. I think England is going to win this match. I really don't think England should be an underdog in this match. Obviously, the books have made them an underdog because coming into the tournament, France was priced ahead of England in terms of winning the tournament. So we get to this point, both teams have looked impressive. They're going to make France the favorite. But what France has become very reliant on is Mbappe, because he is one of the best players in the world. And what they've done a lot is they've created a lot of overloads on the left side of the pitch to create free space for him to actually operate there, because they obviously don't want him to get isolated and have teams double him. So they've played a lot of average teams that aren't able to defend over there on the left side of the pitch, and he's created a ton of their chances. But the problem is now they're facing England. And if you go through France's results since they won the 2018 World Cup in actual competitive competitions, they have not been impressive when they've had to play good teams. They were in a group of death of Euros against Germany and Portugal. They got outcreated in both of those matches, even though they beat Germany. And then they lost in the round of 16 to Switzerland. So, and now we come into this match where they don't have their best starting 11. Karim Benzema has been out for this tournament. They're down a bunch of midfielders. They just lost another one of their center backs, Lucas Hernandez, who also plays fullback. So they have no depth at fullback. Now, England comes in. They've scored the most goals in this World Cup. They have an unbelievable wealth of attacking players. And the real big difference for England now, especially against Senegal, is they've been able to press these teams effectively. A lot of what you'll hear from England is, oh my gosh, they're too slow, they're too pragmatic, they're too conservative, like, and everything. But really what they've done to show in this tournament is they've been aggressive. They've pressed high. They've tried to win the ball off opponents in their own final third and get the ball moving forward and get them out of position. And that's exactly how they scored pretty much all three goals against Senegal. And the difference for them also is they've now have Jude Bellingham, who's one of the best young players in the entire world. His ability not only to be a great defensive midfielder, but also be a creator. It allows England to take off one of their attacking midfielders in Mason Mount and bring on a more defensive presence like Jordan Henderson, who is a great pressing midfielder. And it just gives England so, so much talent across their midfield that they can really dominate matches. Now, they're going up against a France team that has Arlen Tchouameni, who's also one of the best young midfielders in the world. So that matchup's going to be very interesting. But what France does a lot when they have to play bigger teams is they like to sit very, very deep, sit very, very defensive, and then just send Mbappe out on the counter, which works because he's the best attacking player in the world. But against England, he's going to have to face one of the best right backs in the world in Kyle Walker, who can cover ground with the best of them. So I do like England to win this match. I don't think they should be underdogs. They have more talent than France. They have a better manager than France. They've had more impressive underlying numbers than France throughout this tournament. So I do like England to move on to the semifinals.
All right. Well, considering what you said about England, it's even more impressive how the U.S. held on and got a draw there, right? Wouldn't you say? Right.
Yeah, no, what the U.S. did was incredible. Like they took away the middle of the pitch for England. So a lot of those easy passes into Declan Rice, Jude Bellingham, Mason Mount, they took those away and they just forced England to play the ball out wide and beat them with crosses. And it worked. And the thing is France has just as good, or if not a better midfield than the United States. So they can do the exact same thing. But again, this is also France facing England. They're not facing Poland. They're not facing Australia.
Right.
They're facing an incredible midfield, an incredible defense. So we'll see what happens. But I really don't think England should be an underdog in this match.
Well, you've said a lot about Mbappe and how he's, you know, really one of the best players in the world. How impressive has he been just in this tournament alone?
Well, he's been the best player in the tournament. He's got five goals so far. He's basically created everything for France, which is basically what he does for PSG as well. But his ability to not only run by defenders, to dribble by them, his attacking positioning, his finishing ability, like he is, that just makes him the best player in the world. It's what you've seen from Messi for so many years, is not only is he a great finisher, he can dribble by people, but he also has great attacking positioning. And like I already mentioned, with France creating all those overloads on the left to free up space for him, he's just so intelligent in being able to find that space, get in behind defenders and create chances. That's why Olivier Giroud at 35 has three goals. It's because Mbappe has been able to create those type of chances for him. So he's incredible. And if France wins this match, it's going to be because of him. But
again, you're leaning on England.
One player doesn't win a World Cup, as you've seen throughout years past. So, you know, Messi hasn't been able to do it. Ronaldo hasn't been able to do it. So they might get by England here, but it's troublesome when the rest of your team around you can't live up to the potential that Mbappe has.
Okay, so tough break for Mbappe loading up here soon. Okay, BJ, I know that you've got some future bets that you set before this tournament started. What bets are still alive, and is there anything else that you're looking at that maybe we should fire on?
Yeah, well, basically everything ended yesterday with Spain. I had Spain at 9-1. I had Morata golden boot. I had Pedri golden ball, and I had Jordi Alba most assists. So essentially everything ended with that penalty kick yesterday. But I do still have England at 10-1 to win the World Cup. So I really need them to beat France, which, you know, is still obviously very live, the bottom half of the bracket with Portugal and Morocco. But there is one bet that I've made right now, and it's at Caesars, Brazil to reach the final.
Okay.
-125. It's tremendous value because they're obviously playing Croatia. They're huge favorites against them. I do believe they'll get by them. Then if they play Argentina or Netherlands, they're not going to be -125 to advance against them. They're going to be way, way higher, more like -150, -160. I actually project them at -200 to advance against Argentina, and then -287 to advance against the Netherlands. I mean, Brazil has looked like the best team in the world. We knew that coming into the World Cup, they were the favorites. They've lived up to that expectation so far. They have the best underlying numbers of everybody. They have the most talent of anybody in this entire tournament. So that's a very awfully cheap price given what they would be against both Argentina and the Netherlands.
Okay, so you've got England 10-1. You've got Brazil going very far. If you had to pick today, who do you think wins it all?
Not taking into account the odds, I think Brazil is going to win the World Cup. I think they have way, way too much talent. The path is quite easy for them to actually reach that final. And again, they just too much attacking talent, incredible defense. They really should prevail through this tournament.
Okay, so it's going to be Brazil, says BJ. Okay, so obviously there's some big names out there. We've already talked about it in this episode. But are there any young players, young names that are really making a name for themselves in this tournament?
Yeah. I mean, I already mentioned it. Jude Bellingham for England has really transformed this England side, because what they were at the Euros, they had to play a midfield of Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips. While Calvin Phillips is a great defensive midfielder, he doesn't provide much in terms of ball progression and ball carrying and actually getting into the box and creating chances. And Bellingham has done exactly that. So, like I already mentioned, England has now gets to play more of defensive midfielders. They don't have to stick on Mason Mount as an attacking midfielder and play two defensive midfielders. He's completely transformed this England side. He makes these incredible line-breaking passes. He's able to carry the ball through defenders, and it frees up so, so much space for their attackers to actually get it on the end of those chances. Guys like Bukayo Saka, Harry Kane, now they have this space because of what Bellingham creates in the midfield. And he's also an outstanding pressing and defensive midfielder. Like we saw against Senegal, he did an outstanding job of pressing, got the ball back, created the chance for Henderson to score the first goal, and then the match opens up for England. He's incredible. He's going to be probably one of the most expensive transfers coming this summer from Dortmund. We don't know where he's going to go. Another one, he's out of the tournament now, but Pedri, I mean, he's incredible for Spain. He's the Andres Iniesta role. He's completed the most passes into the final third of anybody in this entire tournament. He's so good on the ball, distributing, pressing. Just those two guys are probably going to end up being two of the best midfielders in the world for the next decade or so. And then Arlen Tchouameni for France is also another one. Outstanding defensive midfielder for Real Madrid. Just made a move this past summer for $80 million. He also makes this France team incredibly good, because guys like Rabiot, Griezmann, they don't have to worry about sitting back and playing more defensive because he cleans up so much in terms of transition defense. So those are three guys that I would say have impressed me the most, are the great young players. We already knew about Mbappe, like from the last tournament. You know, obviously he's the best player in the world, but those three guys have really impressed me this entire tournament, and they've been impressive for their club teams for quite a long time now.
Okay, I love that. And, you know, as Americans, I feel like we put all of our hopes and dreams into Pulisic because he plays in the Premier League. Just how good or not good is Pulisic on the grand scheme of things with the best players in the world?
I mean, he's good. He's finding a lot of difficulty getting into the Chelsea side right now because they have a lot of great attacking players. He is really good in terms of his ball progression, in terms of receiving passes in between the lines. Like, he's very, very, very good in terms of the grand scheme of things. There obviously are better wingers and attackers out there. Like, you kind of see that when he can't get into the side for Chelsea.
Yeah.
But we do have a lot of great young players. Like, our midfield is very young. You know, Yunus Musa is probably going to make a move to a bigger club here, maybe even in January or the summer. So he was incredible this World Cup. Obviously, we didn't play Giovanni Reyna too much, but he's incredible for Dortmund. He'll probably make a move to a bigger club here pretty soon as well. And then Brendan Aaronson also didn't get on the pitch very much, but he was having an incredible season for Leeds in the English Premier League. So we have a lot of young talent that's playing in the top five leagues in Europe, which is a really, really good thing. If we ever want to challenge some of these teams like Brazil, like Spain, like England, we have to have our players playing in the best leagues in the world and not in the MLS.
So you think in 4 years, then the US could even do better, you know, and maybe
we're the round of
16.
We're the third youngest team at this tournament. You know, a lot of our players are 24 and below. So the peak age in soccer is 26, 27 years old.
Okay.
So all of our players are going to be at that peak age wow. when we reach the 2026 World Cup. So it really sets up well for the United States to make a deep run in our home country.
You know, for as popular as youth soccer is in this country, you would think that we would have more players or better players. But I guess just when you're competing with the world.
It's starting to get that way. I mean, we've seen it, I'm a little bit older. I'm in my 30s as well, and youth soccer wasn't really that big, but it's becoming bigger. And now you're seeing players over the past decade with this big push that once they get good, they're making moves to Europe.
Yeah.
Pulisic went over to Dortmund when he was 18 years old.
Yeah.
Aronson went over to Austria when he was very, very young. His brother, even, who played for Philadelphia Union, he's 18 years old. He just made a move to Germany this past summer. So all of our good players are making those moves to Europe. And also what we're doing is we're flipping nationalities on a lot of guys as well. Serginho Dest, he was Dutch, but he flipped to American. Musa was between Spain and England, and we got him to flip to the United States. So constantly going out and trying to flip people who have those, the ties to the United States and trying to get them to come play for the United States. Even Pulisic, he was Croatian. So
right. He
had to choose between United States and Croatia, and he chose the United States. So that's big, if the United States ever wants to go forward, is flipping those type of nationalities, which happens all the time in international soccer.
Come on over to the red, white, and blue. We definitely want you.
You'll actually play.
you will actually play. You'll get a bunch of Americans who don't know a lot about soccer betting a lot of money on you every single week. Vijay, thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to see you next week to preview the final. Tell everyone where to find you on Action.
Right. So I'm a part of a podcast called the Wonder Goal Podcast, which you can find wherever you get your podcast, along with my co-host Anthony DeBundo and Michael Lieboff. We not only do the World Cup, we also do the Big Five leagues in Europe. We're two times a week, Champions League, Europa League, everything with betting on international soccer we cover. We'll also be doing a live show here on this Wednesday night, 5 p.m. Eastern time, previewing all the quarterfinal matches. And then we'll also be back doing live shows as well for the semifinals. And final. And you can also find that in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts.
And where do we find you on social?
At BJ Cunningham 22 is my Twitter.
Okay, great. I'm sure you're posting your picks and takes and all kinds of things on that as well. All right. Thanks, BJ. We'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you.
Time now for Mox Locks. Let's kick it back to football, the American football, with some PNF bets for the Raiders versus the Rams. First up, I'm going to lay the points here with the Raiders -6. While the 2022 season has been the year of the underdog from a betting perspective, dogs covering at 54% this year. As we move down the stretch of the season, you're going to see a lot more favorites start to cover here. That was evident last weekend as chalk went 8-0 straight up and 6-2 against the spread. But we did see that LA does have some playmakers still in their lineup last week versus Seattle. They put up 23 points. Vegas just coming into this matchup with a 3-game winning streak and a defensive front that has been really, really scary. Vegas pass rush led by Chandler Jones and Max Crosby are ranked 6th in the NFL with 39% pressure rate. The unit was able to get Justin Herbert 5 times last week and recorded 11 sacks in just 3 weeks. The Rams have been a bottom 5 offense in terms of yards per play this year, ranking the 2nd worst with 5.1 yards per play. I just don't see too much of a change here, no matter who's at quarterback, if it's going to be Baker or Wolford or Perkins. And let's not forget that Los Angeles is much more of a Raiders town than it is a Rams town. SoFi Stadium is going to be one big black hole. Prop bets, I'm looking at Van Jefferson under 39.5 receiving yards. The Raiders have the NFL's 30th ranked pass defense this season, yielding 250 yards per game through the air. In a normal circumstance, I would say that's going to lead you to believe that the Rams are going to be airing it out more. However, there's just too many questions at quarterback, and they've got a Swiss cheese O-line. I think Cam Akers is going to get a majority of the work tomorrow. Jefferson's average is 23 receiving yards per game. That's 16.5 fewer than his prop line for Thursday's contest. Jefferson only has hit this mark once in 12 games played, so I'm going to hit the under on that one. And over that I like, well, Devontae Adams over 88.5 receiving yards, -117. Adams has gone over on his receiving yards prop at 67% of appearances this season. In fact, he averages 9.5 more yards than this mark per game this season. In the last 4 games, Adam has had at least 7 catches, 126 receiving yards, and 5 touchdowns. That and the Rams secondary was lit up by Geno Smith last week. He was 28 for 39 for 367 yards and 3 touchdowns. It's got to make Carr and Adams feel pretty confident coming into this matchup. I like him to go over the 88.5 easily. This has been Moxie Bets presented by Caesars Sportsbook. We'll see you next time. Don't forget to follow us on social at Moxie Bets.